We need to go to the high school and two small. We need to send one of them to. Well, that.
Is this one going to be the same height?
We're going to have to apply for a variance from the city because the city restricts our height.
I went freaking community college.
Yep, but they're a community college.
Excuse me?
And then during this.
Good, yeah. Okay, it's just tender and it's sore and when I.
That was like bend over.
I'm speaking into your microphone.
Lifting something heavy or.
They should do it all.
Or your muscle can get, your muscle tissue can get weak and it'll burst, it'll tear. And when I had the doctor do it. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
He said it's kind of like cloth. If you don't take care of it, it will start moving and then it will burst. All right, ready guys? All right. All right, phones off on silent or vibrate guys. Call this meeting to order. This is a special meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Canutillo Independent School District. Today is May 23rd, 2011. The time is 6:05 p.m. Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Casas?
Here.
Mr. Coronado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Ms. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Charles?
Here.
All right, first agenda item.
Through the chair.
Dr. Murphy.
President, board members, before we get started, I did want to let you know about a calendar item. Mr. Villalobos, who recently passed away at DDE, there is going to be a memorial at Davenport Elementary on May 26th at 8:30 a.m. And I will include that in Eagle Notes this week, but I did want to announce that the school is having a very appropriate, positive memorial and invite any board member that wants to come May 26th at 8:30 a.m. at Davenport. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Murphy. All right. Agenda item number.
Item 2A, consider purchase of teacher creative materials, materials for grades K through 5 in a total amount of $141,836.66, utilizing CSP
10-09.
Ms.
Fierro.
Board President Coronado, board members, and Dr. Murphy, this is a science resource for elementary. Getting in our data just affirms more that we really do need extra supplements for science. The next science adoption has been held off by the state indefinitely due to funding. So, and we really are, being here a year now, I see that and listening to the teachers, we really are lacking resources to help us in science. It is a one-time purchase, and for all of the elementary campuses, and to address the K-5 teaks in science.
Ms. Fierro, how did it come about that this product was chosen? And what funding is going to pay for it?
The funding is coming from, I believe Title I.
I didn't bring that.
Yes, Title I funding. The program was piloted at one of our elementary campuses, Canutillo Elementary School. First, to see if they found it to be relevant to their standards, and also if they felt that it was something their students would benefit from, and was it teacher friendly, was it student friendly. When the feedback came back positive, then I brought in all of the elementary principals and the instructional coordinators to meet with CES's administration, instructional coordinator, and the teachers that piloted it, so that we could talk about what it was about the program or the resource that they found beneficial. And so they all reached a consensus that yes, they wanted this product on their campus to supplement the science curriculum to supplement C-Scope.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Ms. Searles.
I'm looking in our board book, and it looks like there's two programs, one for science and one for content area reading.
Yes. It is science and content area reading because the state has told us that we need to spend as much time with expository reading as we are with fiction. Mm-hmm. Because also the fourth grade writing is now, instead of having one writing day, they're going to have two writing days. One will be a personal narrative, one will be an expository writing. So we have to bring more content area into the reading. So it's a perfect opportunity for teachers to use science with their readings for the interdisciplinary so that students can get more experience with the expository.
So they will be used in conjunction with one another is what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chair, is this the only program that is unique?
I'm sorry?
Is this the only program the only resource that would be available, or is there other people that could provide the same resource?
Sole source?
Is it a sole source, or is it possible different types of people that could provide the same service?
I haven't found any that have provided this type of material. I'm always looking for science, for the interdisciplinary, and especially as we're going toward expository. I know that EPISD is using it. Other districts, Socorro is also using it. So we have other districts in the area that are using it.
It isn't sole source, though. Is it on some sort of bid list?
It is.
Is it
on
my board?
It's a CSP on page 4, CSP 10, in the instructional list that you have. Yeah, in my view, no curriculum product is sole source. It's a zillion of curriculum products, but this may be the best of the bunch. But it's based on your own CSP. If you look at page 4.
I don't rely on sole source per Mr. Baskin's advice. You know, we really go with good lists to make sure that going through that process and avoiding sole source.
Mr. Chair, I have another question.
Ms. Searles.
This is somewhat, I don't mean to muddy the waters, but, okay. And I don't mean to sound like a moron either, but I did see on TV that Johns Hopkins University now had a science project using striped fish. Are you aware of this?
Yeah.
It's an incredible program, and they've used it throughout the country for elementary and middle school science.
Right. And there are
the results are phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal what they have done with these fish. And they give you, as best I can tell, they give you everything. For food for thought.
Absolutely. And another thing that we want to look at in the future of, as well as something like ScanTech, which is a computer-based. And we're not saying that this is the, and we had this discussion with the principals and instructional coordinators as they were discussing it. It's a one-time purchase, and it's not the only product that we'll probably look at using in the future. It's going to be a supplement to C-Scope because it is very, one of the things they liked about it was very rigorous. The reading was at a very high level. The vocabulary was at a high level. And as we move to STAR, we need to start looking at resources that are rigorous. Another thing that we'll look at in the future, because again, I don't want to bring in a whole bunch of things at once is there's a science program that they're interested in called ScanTech. Well, that would be a yearly renewal. So, you know, we'll bring that in, we'll look at it, we'll analyze it, looking at the standards. But this isn't the end all be all, but it is another resource that's going to help us with expository reading and reading at a high level, as well as the science objectives.
Mr.
Patsy, can you help?
I have a question. Chair. Pam, the other school districts that are presently using this supplemental program, have they had it for a year or did they just purchase it? Meaning, have they had it a year or have they seen success with it?
Do you want to talk about how long the other districts have had it?
do you want to come up here? I'll let, Doug Town is the representative for Teacher Creative Materials.
Board Member President Coronado, board members, and Dr. Murphy, my name is Doug Town. I'm with Teacher Creative Materials. I represent the company that publishes the resources that Ms. Fierro is recommending, and your fellow districts in the El Paso area have implemented these resources over the course of the past school year, specifically the science readers. So in terms of data that links back to those resources, at this point, they're not available. But anecdotally, the feedback has been wonderful from your friends over at El Paso ISD, Socorro, Clint ISD, and Isleta ISD. So, and really to reiterate what Ms. Garrett was speaking to is, as we all move to STAR, the integration of content and literacy is critical. And how do you expose students to science as well as reading and writing synonymously and enable and allow a teacher to do that in a classroom setting, retaining the rigor, which is much needed as we head to STAR, but being able to differentiate for students of all levels, the LEP population all the way to above level students. These resources were built to allow a teacher to do that effectively in one classroom setting, as opposed to the need to pull students out independently, one-on-one. They can work in small groups individually as well as a whole group. So that's another benefit to the resource.
And I really relied heavily on the teachers that were using it and their feedback, because it's like I told Doug, because often I will go and I will observe other campuses using products that we would consider for Kamatio. But I really hadn't seen Teacher Creative Materials, and I'd been looking at it for a long time. And I brought them in because we were also looking at interventions and differentiation, which is one of the things I liked about this program. So when the teachers were really excited about it, they were the teachers from CES, it was Lily Maldonado, Ms. Ressa, and Sylvia Nunez, who had piloted it. When they came back, and because I know that they're going to tell me the truth, and so when they came back very excited about differentiation, about rigor, I really considered their feedback and really relied on that heavily. And as curriculum instruction grows, and we can start get content experts in, I can really have them work with those teachers more. But at this juncture, I really relied heavily on that the piloting, and then the conversations that. And one of the reasons I chose CES is because I had done a vertical alignment with them with mathematics, where they had studied the standards, so they knew. They knew when we're reading a standard and we're looking at the verb and we're looking at the content that's in that standard, what is it the student is expected to do? Identify, compare, contrast, and then what are they expected to identify, compare, contrast, classification, and so forth. So because I had taken through that study in mathematics, I relied on them to really look at their science standards and look at the product and see, will this get us to the rigor? Is this really something that we can use for our standards in science? So I that's why I took it to them and trusted them. And I know that they're going to be honest with me, because I know, vendors are going to love their product and sell it, of course, but I needed to make sure that it was going to work for our kids and our Texas standards. And so I did rely on them quite a bit. And then when we had the conversations with the rest of the instructional coordinators, and he took them through, and the teachers that piloted were able to make the connections to what he was saying and what they did in the classroom, then, and they came to a consensus that this is something that they felt that they could use in their classrooms. That's, I relied heavily on that. More so than any other district using it, or that type of data.
Anybody else? Yes, sir?
Go ahead. I think we're going to ask the same question, maybe.
Okay.
Ms. Aguirre?
Yes.
A week ago, we had $100,000 to buy a program. Now we have $141,000. Is this new money, old money, saved up money?
No, it's the remaining monies that were captured that haven't been spent, and because we are trying to utilize the funds for the current year, this was money that was available.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Rodriguez.
actually, I just asked Dr. Murphy that question, but my thing on the fiscal year budget that we had, you're talking about, was that some of the stuff that was going to go into fund balance, no, or it's still within the budget?
No, this is Title I.
This is
not local money,
though. Okay. The other question I had, y'all weren't here, but the FOSS kits, is that what it's called? And then, do you remember the controversy behind that? And then we bought books a while back, and now this. My thing is, how are we integrating with C-Scope everything, all these resources? Is one overlapping the other, or is this just something that is going to complement?
It's definitely going to complement, because it's aligned to the standards, and it's just, again, it's going to allow for that differentiation. And the C-Scope lessons are negotiable. So when we're looking at the standards and we're looking at the tested curriculum, and we have I-Core, you know, currently this year, we need more than one resource to really fill all the gaps. And we need the teachers to study the standards, study the pieces of the C-Scope, and then decide, do we want to use a C-Scope lesson? We have these other resources here. If we need to bring in some expository reading, and we need and some high-level reading, then, because the teachers at the PLCs are the ones that are doing the how. We tell them the what, and the why is the performance standard, but we don't tell them the how. So that's when they can bring together the different resources to use, and they make the decision on the resources. Because if we just have C-Scope, then we're telling them the how, too. We're telling them, yeah, you have to do this. We're only providing you this resource for your lesson. But if we bring in other things and let them make the decisions around the table, the PLC, and provide them different resources, then we're not relying on just one group of people who created this lesson, the people that wrote C-Scope.
Just to clarify, on the federal money that's being switched over, do we have to spend that under the federal calendar, or is it under our fiscal year calendar?
Federal calendar.
And how much longer do we have?
That's August 31st.
August 31st, and how much are we looking at spending? How much are we looking at select on the budget?
Oh, I could give that information right off. I can do provided the funding.
Are we looking at more programs that we're going to have to spend that federal money?
No, this was pretty much the end of the bulk of the money.
Okay.
Well, Monica.
All right, Monica.
You said you, I understood you to say you used it at CE, the test group, and was it K through 5th or just 5th grade or all grade
levels? It was K first, I believe 3rd and 5th.
Okay, and my question is, I mean, I want to make sure we're getting a buy-in to this, because I know in the past we bought stuff like this, and I've seen it in the warehouse collecting dust. I've seen it not being utilized. Because it's a big high dollar purchase. I mean, what was their feedback? How did the kids react to it?
The kids didn't want to put it down, according to the teachers. They loved it. They were engaged. They did not want to put the material down because it was so interesting. And because it's at different levels, the students aren't going to struggle or feel like they're not being successful or that they're not as smart as somebody else, because then we can give them reading material at their level and we can move them forward, because it is very heavily based on differentiation, which is what we're trying to help our teachers do. But it's very hard to do if you're not providing resources to help you do that. It makes it very difficult to plan a lesson.
And is this program is engaging them, what, via a reading? Is it a book? Is it a computer, technology? How are these students being engaged through this program?
Yes, it's mainly readers. Did you want to tell them about it?
The program is primarily made up of readers, and then the additional product we were talking about, the exploring nonfiction, that complementing resource, are what's called high-interest nonfiction text cards from Time for Kids. So they're being exposed to nonfiction content in both reader and then almost like, you know, single snapshot of magazine articles, if you will. And one of the benefits of both is they're both available in Spanish as well. So everything that's in English is also in Spanish with a bilingual instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, what we do, and Ms. Piero mentioned, is a one-time purchase. We allow teachers to actually have a black line master of every product on what's called a teacher resource CD. So they're always able to reproduce readers, you know, projected integrated technology that's already, you know, existing in the classroom, and manipulate those documents to better fit, you know, their instructional practices that day, whether they're graphic organizers or assessment pieces, etc. So that was a big, you know, positive for the teachers, the ease of use for them, and the ability to customize it based on their instructional practices. It's not a scripted program per se, by any means. It's structured. If they want to follow that structure, they can, but they can also manipulate it based on, you know, their tenure and what they are good at, and they can integrate pieces of it. It also includes, in addition to the readers, DVD clips to activate background knowledge or expose students to things that they've never been exposed to, so there is some integration of technology there.
A hurricane, or, you know, things that they would just really quality videos.
Okay. Good chair.
Dr. Murphy.
Going back to, we have bought a lot of products this year. Have we bought any science products?
No. And I wouldn't want to have bought this early in the year because, you know, we brought on I-Corps, we brought on Kilgo, we brought on Eduphoria. We've really insisted on a deeper implementation of C-Scope. We've done walkthroughs. And, I mean, they're getting ready, I mean, as you probably know, to just say, wait a minute. So, you know, it really is the best time right now to bring it on because it's right before curriculum writing, so that the company can come in and train the curriculum writers on the resources, so when they find gaps in C-Scope, we can say, okay, we now have this resource that we can put in here. So it's, and then we'll give them time to actually process this and look through it instead of waiting until September to get it, and then now there's this new thing being thrown at them where they really haven't had time to process it. Say, okay, we can use this at this grade level for this certain topic, and then we can bring it in for reading. So then for elementary, the curriculum writers are going to focus on, there will be two that work on ELA and the social studies to try to kind of parallel that, get more bang for our buck in the classroom, and then working with math and science. So they'll really get to work together, but all together we'll be working as a team. So they'll really get to look at those readers, where does it go well with the science, and really look at the curriculum to make those lessons in the elementary class more interdisciplinary. Because the way when we purchase C-Scope, we have a team writing mathematics, there's a team writing science, there's a team writing ELA, and a team writing social studies. Well, that makes it very difficult for the elementary teachers to really make it meaningful. Instead of just blocking off time, they can really start bringing that stuff together, and we can get more bang for our buck for the time because they're raising the bar and we have to hit it at that level. And so it's going to give them time to really look through it this summer and put it in the right places.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chair, yes. I would like to
Rachel.
Ask, how long did they test this?
A couple weeks. And then you left it with them in the classroom. And so when we finally met with the principals several weeks ago, they brought student work and just were very, very excited about the prospect of having it because it was, the students loved it, and it was very teacher friendly.
They tested long enough to see if it made a difference.
Well, right. And most vendors won't allow that because then they, you know. So I was happy that they were, you know, allowing us 2 weeks because most of them say, well, you know, if you want to use it, you have to purchase it. So I wasn't, you know, I was grateful, and I wasn't going to purchase it if it didn't happen.
That window of time was defined more so by the teachers in terms of how long that they were willing to pilot it for, just because of obviously testing coming up, etc. So we were very open. The materials were given to the teachers to pilot it, and they could retain those materials, and they did subsequent to the end of the pilot, if you will, and they continued to use them. So when we came back for our second meeting, when the principals were brought in with the instructional facilitators representing the other campuses, they had still used them after the quote-unquote pilot, I guess, officially ended, and continued to work with the students and continue to I guess, collect feedback from a teacher and student perspective and share that out with the group when we have the principals, you know, collectively gathered. So professional development also is something that's included in that price. That's something that as a company, we're a family-owned, teacher-led company, we're passionate about. You mentioned that, you know, many materials sit in the warehouse, and I hear that all the time. And that, you know, collecting dust, or if they get to the classroom, they're on the shelves collecting dust, and that's a breakdown from a publishing standpoint. We need to do a good job of making sure that they're implemented properly. So we put together a plan to do that. I was going to train the curriculum writers on it so they can begin to embed it into your scope and sequence, so when you launch in September, they're already ready to go. And then after they begin using it, getting their feet wet, we're going to come back with a professional consultant and dig a little bit deeper and share with the teachers strategies on how to integrate literacy and content. Those materials can be used during reading time, science time, etc. So building a sustainable professional development model for us is critical so the students and teachers continue to benefit. Because the last thing we want is you all purchase it, you know, one and done. You know, like we train and then we walk away. We don't do that. So that's also included in that price.
Anybody else?
I do.
Betty.
I would have personally preferred that each campus was one, at least one representative from each campus was involved. You selected Canto and Metro, I don't know why, but...
Well, I had selected them because I had, that campus, I did a K-5 vertical alignment training on studying standards for the math. So I felt pretty confident that they were going to look at it from the lens of the standards, studying the standards, because we had spent a whole day looking at vertical alignment for mathematics, so asking them to use the same process for science. I felt they had a really good understanding of the study of the standards and looking at a resource to see if it was going to work for us.
But this is $141,000, it's not cheap.
Right, and it is a one-time purchase. Once we buy it, it's ours. So that's one of the reasons I felt like, okay, it's 141, that's a lot, but it's not going to be a recurring cost. We will own what we buy. Videos, readers.
I have another question for Ms. Hager. Martha, how much money, also can you let us know how much money is allowed to be rolled over from Title I funds?
Okay, there is, I don't have that exact amount right now, but what I will share with you is that when money's rolled forward, obviously we didn't use it during the fiscal year. What TEA does is they'll keep some of it. And right now, in the state, the state is in with the funding cuts. Our hesitation is to let them take back that money and then keep it, and not roll forward the amounts next year. And so that was kind of where we're trying to make sure we spend all the funds so that we can avoid the state keeping the funding that was allocated to our district.
I have another question, Mr. Brown. Are we using the baskets right now?
We do have some campuses pulling the inventory of the FOS kits together, and that's something that I really need to do an inventory, but it's kind of separate, or it also that would be a supplement to C-Scope, and it's not something that these two would clash in any way. But one of the things that we're gonna do through the curriculum writing is make sure that we have all the lab materials that the campus needs to do the science labs. And I know that's one of the things that I've been hearing is that we're a little bit low on that. So that's one of my goals this year, is to make sure that we stock all the campuses with all the science materials that they need. Another thing I was going to mention is with the principals, because I'm $141,000, I realize is a lot of money. I was, you know, kind of thinking, wow, this is a lot of money. One-time purchase helped me. But also, implementation, I'm concerned about that too. I don't want to put anything on the campus that's going to sit on a shelf. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to benefit teachers and students. I'm very careful about the selection. But so I did, there was some conversation about the materials. But, you know, what the principals kept saying, there is nothing here that our teachers won't love. There's nothing here that our teachers won't use. because I think they're also very protective of their teachers and what they're going to ask them to use on their campuses. So that's why, you know, and the same with the instructional coordinators. So it was, I really did, again, I relied very heavily on their feedback and what they think they're going to do on the campus. Because I just, and I, you know, wish I would have time to be able to pilot it at the, you know, every teacher in every campus, but it just, it was, this was a challenge in itself, having been able to do that and get the materials and put them out there and so forth, so.
Anybody else? Rachel.
Did the people that tested it, did they fill out any evaluation form as to how they would rate it or what they thought their strong points of it was?
It was verbal. It was really on discussion, and when we brought in the instructional coordinators and the principals, it was just a discussion around the table. One of the things that they found challenging was it was the worksheets that were in, the worksheets that were in English, that if they wanted to use them in Spanish, they had to translate them, but what they liked about them was that they were in Word, so they could. And I know that they're working on it, but again, it's going to be lessons that they can pick and choose from. So the ones that they want to use for the dual language program and for the Spanish speakers, and the ones that testing in Spanish, they can translate with because it's a Word document that they can change and translate it and print in Spanish. So they like that they were able to do that. That it just did not come with it.
And what Ms. Fierro is referencing is just one small piece to the Exploring Nonfiction resource that complements it. And that was, it's just the independent practice piece. We're not a company that's worksheet driven in terms of you know, sit here independently and work through it by any means. We believe in good, sound, rigorous instruction differentiated by the teacher in the classroom or in small group settings. But that was just one piece, and that was the feedback that that teacher had, which was well received. But she did like the ability to still be able to manipulate it. We do give open access to teachers to do that. It's your intellectual content once it's purchased. So.
Hey, I have another question. One more.
Last yes.
You said we own it. We're going to own it if we purchase it. Okay. Everything gets old real quick. Are there going to be updates? And will those cost anything? But I got some other software.
I'm sorry?
Will there be updates, concurrent updates?
There's no software within the
resource. Oh, there's no software?
No, ma'am, there's not. The only software, well, it's not software, would be DVD clips, and those are just real life, for instance, you know, tornadoes or hurricanes or floods or wildfires. So that's the...
So really, there's really no computer technology?
There's no computer technology in terms of the students getting on a computer and working through anything. There is what's called that teacher resource CD, and it's simply files that allow a teacher to reproduce anything or project the book or the activity card on the screen, but there's no software where you need updates and compatibility, so no, there'd be no need for updates.
Anybody else?
Just real quick, I guess it's more content-based and it has visual compared to the more hands-on and stuff like that. Is that correct? Just to clarify.
It's very heavy reading-based. With the content, it is very content-based. It's not as lab-based as, you know, maybe more our FOSS kits, but it is teaching them the content of science.
If I can just expound on that, the goal of the resource is to truly teach or integrate, you know, content, which is in this case science, reading and writing. So within every lesson, if you will, there is a lab experiment. Which is found even on the differentiated pairs of readers. It's a common lab focusing on that specific strand of science, maybe forces in motion and whatnot. So there is that, and that lab is built on the 5E model, which is consistent with good inquiry-based instruction relative to science. So there is that lab piece. The resource doesn't provide the lab materials, though. Those would obviously already have to be on the campus, per se, but it does focus a big portion on that. But the other side of the fence is good, rich vocabulary development, academic and content area vocabulary, trying to get that you know, the foundation build, and then focusing on the comprehension of science. You know, as students work through tasks this year and the STAR moving forward, that vocabulary development piece is huge in both languages. And that's something that every lesson is front-loaded with that vocabulary to try to set them up for success leading up to an ultimate lab experiment. So it does include that as well.
The labs, one of the things that they did like about the labs that they used was that they were able to find most of that stuff already in their classroom. It wasn't as much like the beakers and that kind of thing. It was labs that they could find, paper clips and those kind of things they could use in the classroom. It wasn't, but not that we don't need that, we do. We do need those as well, but that's one of the things that they found. It was the labs were very easy to do within the classroom with the things that they already had.
Anybody
that's
else?
The feedback that that was given.
Anybody else?
I'll just make a motion to approve the purchase of the teacher-created materials, instructional materials for grades K through 5.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second before the board on agenda item 2A. Pam, I do have some questions, and just to, and I guess some of the board members don't care. Before we had, guys, before, and I know some of you may know this, some of you not, before we had even the fifth grade science reading books that we bought several years back, the only thing we had was the Foskets, and our teachers had to do their own supplemental materials for it. And the fourth grade and third grade had nothing to assist them, and so the fifth grade teachers were being held responsible for the content on the tax test for fifth graders, mm-hmm. for the stuff that everybody else before them did except in their year, which they had no previous real content-based science instruction. Am I right or wrong?
Are you talking about just the test critiques that are tested in fifth grade?
Fifth grade.
Well,
before that, did we have anything? In other words, before we had C-Scope, before we had the science books, what did the third and fourth grade teachers rely on to be able to teach towards the fifth grade content that was being taught, or tested rather, in fifth grade science?
I'm
not aware of it.
Well, it was the Foskett, but there was no other supplemental materials, right?
Right.
At all.
So it wasn't, and you know, Foskett isn't really TEKS based.
No, it's
you know,
not.
It's a program that, you know, just kind of like, I'm trying to remember the name of, there's another science program that is also not TEKS based that's used, but. You know, we really want to, that's why we want to bring in resources instead of programs.
Right. And we tried about 6 to 8 years ago doing in the summers, doing writing for the curriculum for all the middles, for the elementaries. And we started to do that, but we never seemed to be able to put it into, during the year. We'd do it in the summer, and we just didn't have the resources to be able to implement during the year. Then our teachers came and said that they wanted some additional materials like the science books, since we didn't have any science books at fifth grade. Now that we have C-Scope, that provides some prior to fifth grade, at least some kind of instruction.
From kindergarten.
From K on, right?
Yes. Through the chair, a lot of that changed this year. We did spend quite a bunch of it, of time and resources, curriculum writing last summer, and that was implemented at a high level this year, and we're ready to do it again. Round two is going to be in June and July, and I think the feeling is that this product can get integrated into that curriculum writing and then rolled out successfully, similar to how we've done it this past year.
Right, and one of the things that we want to do also is already curriculum to just make a list for 6 weeks. What are the materials that we need to implement any labs or anything that's in C-Scope or any lab that they want to do so that we can make sure that's ready. And then one of the things that is going to happen next year is each content area, K-12, is going to be pulled in once every 9 weeks so that we can study the next 9 weeks of curriculum. What is it that we need? What resources are we using? What supplies do we need? And make sure that they walk out that meeting with everything that they need to implement the curriculum in the next 9 weeks.
Okay. And so, and I remember when we had our meeting on C-Scope that the teachers came to us. One of the things that I remember from our elementary teachers, that they had a little bit more issue with the C-Scope implementation than did the secondary teachers, because the secondary teachers, obviously, are a lot more responsible for, you know, a smaller content area in their field, which would, you know, either math or science or language arts, and not all of it like the elementary teachers. And they, I mean, I remember their complaint saying that they found themselves at a disadvantage because of those issues, that the teachers at the secondary level who seemed to like it more and that could focus some of the issues with respect to, in terms of using the Eduphoria, that they could also allow differentiated instruction at a higher level for those students that had already gotten, you know, the previous content area.
Which is why I think these, but, they really like this because it allowed a lot of interdisciplinary with the science, the reading, and the writing.
Okay, and I look at it as a good and bad, because what I heard from them was, hey, you're not giving us, from some of them, you're not giving us the freedom to do differentiated instruction from ours. And we told them from the get-go that this, that C-Scope had to be a living, changing thing. And, but now we're giving them, and I guess in terms for the elementary, it's good that we give them alternative sources to be able to fill in some of those gaps if they have a lot of content area they themselves have to cover. So I can see that in respect, but
well,
as long as this, these materials alone are not going to be, you know, supplementing their own creative differentiated instruction, so to speak.
Right. And we're going to make sure they're not supplanting, that they're supplementing. But I think one of the challenges for the elementary teachers is that the C-Scope writers are four total separate teams.
Mm-hmm.
When they, you know, have these students all day and have all four content areas to teach, that I think they need resources that really will help them integrate the different subject areas.
And I agree, and I like that about this, about these materials. The other issue is I just hope that they get used, because in the past we've bought materials, like Monica was saying and a few other people, actually, even at the middle school level, we bought materials that were supposed to be, the teachers didn't even know about them.
Mr. Chair,
they had them stacked away.
Yes.
And so there was no, you know, I just want to make sure that we have some kind of a, I don't know, checklist that every year we check out those materials that we've bought and make sure that we have some kind of a, you know, I guess
tracking
in terms of the usage of these materials that we're actually getting implemented.
Right, and I think
because I know it's difficult because some teachers will and won't.
Right.
I think now that we have the PLCs, it's better, because within themselves they're going to be able to, they can't just ignore it the whole year.
Exactly. And I think that's going to be the importance of the district PLC. It's going to be the importance of professional development for the curriculum writers, and integrating it into the curriculum. And then also any PD that we find any campus needs, that we make sure that they have all the resources and the support, because we can hand them things, which I know sometimes has happened, but then how do we use it and what do we do with it? So that, for that is a CNI responsibility to make sure that implementation happens. If you know, teachers and principals and instructional coordinators found benefit that this can help their campus and it's a good product, then we need to make sure that we provide the support that the teachers need to implement it and the knowledge and how to use it for differentiation. And we realize that you know, we can't just cast about and expect implementation.
You know, and along those lines, we're really kind of, as the board, we should be able to review that all our programs are reviewed periodically. We know that we're using not just the programs, but we're talking about content materials that we purchase, our you know, instructional technology, our C-Scope, which is our curriculum management system. We ought to do some kind of a, you know, periodic review that, in fact, we're taking advantage of this, and maybe we ought to that end, maybe we ought to look at doing a campus, at all campuses, is a yearly,
survey
to see, you know, specifics that will indicate to us, in fact, whether or not, you know, by the questions we ask, whether or not, in fact, they took advantage of that or not.
Okay.
I mean, some key issues that they would only know how to answer if, in fact, they took advantage of using these products. Just food for thought.
Right, and I think, and certainly us doing walkthroughs often and actually going out and talking, visiting with PLCs, meeting with them, you know, asking what are you using, what are you not using, what do you like, what don't you like.
Well, that's one thing I like about Dr. Murphy. He's been doing a lot more walkthroughs and catching people whether they are using or not. In the past, we'd have our principals going in once every, you know, I don't know, once a year. And that's certainly not enough. So, I mean, I like the material, I like the program, and I like the way that it synthesizes both the language arts and the science content to be able to teach it at the same time. So, I'm for it. I just want to make sure that we keep tabs that we're actually utilizing it to its for what we're paying for it. So.
Yeah, the other thing I was just going to add, which was mentioned and had been talked about, when you had the bilingual education teachers that, you know, especially on the science books, I guess the bilingual portion wasn't sufficient or something.
That's true. They didn't have the
at least this is added value to that. So.
Yeah.
I agree. That was a big plus for them as well. So.
Anybody else? All right. Tony, pull the board.
Mrs. Cassidy?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searle?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Next item.
Item 2B, consider purchase of Kagan instructional materials in the total amount of $15,554, utilizing RFP 1117 this year.
Mr. Chair. I make a motion to approve the administration's recommendation for the Kagan system.
All right. We have a motion before the board. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right. Yeah, there is a second on agenda item 2B. Any discussion, comments, or questions from the board? Ms. Rose.
On page 23 in our board packet, it indicates someone is going to get a ticket in the mail to go to an event, a learning event with this program. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? Okay.
No.
Here on your, I guess your receipt, this has got a line item of what we're buying with the total of it. And it says you don't make your travel arrangements until you receive a workshop. A ticket in the mail. Please contact Kagan if you do not receive your ticket in the mail 2 weeks prior to the event.
This was kind of a worksheet that I used. Let me see. I'm not seeing the ticket in the mail.
Go about all the way to it's internet orders, attention participants. It's like we're going to get some staff training with this.
No, this is, I just copy and pasted this worksheet. This was just a worksheet to calculate the cost. Just ignore.
So we're not. Nobody's getting to go to the workshop.
No, because we don't do email orders. I just use this to get an amount because we don't do the POs. We don't do them through email. So that we're not traveling to any workshop. Actually, Kagan is coming here.
Okay.
So this was a mistake. I should have. That, so.
Yeah, and this is just a recurrence of what we did last year, is that correct? Another part of it.
Last year it was secondaries.
Right.
And I'm so excited because we're having a Kagan Academy the first week in August. And so we're having over 40 teachers come in during their summer to receive training for math and science on Kagan. So I'm really proud of them and very excited that they're actually giving this time.
Through the chair, I think it's just important to point out, we The first one we did, the teacher created, that's new. Kagan's in the district. We have Kagan at play in many areas.
But now we're, now this is an elementary focus, whereas before it was a secondary focus. Very well received. And for secondary teachers to receive something well is really, there's something to be said for that. Elementary, when I walked into different classrooms, I'll see teachers giving a lesson, and the teacher will be standing helping one student, and all the other students are working independently. So while she's helping this one student, the other ones are getting off task, and so their time is being wasted. The training that was approved before and the materials that go with it are training materials to help 100% engagement in the classroom. So students are working with each other, coaching each other, and even if the teacher is helping one group, all the other groups are engaged in working together, talking. You'll see this in what I bring to you often: reading, writing, speaking, and listening to the academic language. And it's true for all kids, but especially for our ELL learners, because you know they don't go home and talk about carpet, area of the carpet in their living room. That academic language just doesn't happen around the dinner table for most households. So they really have to, instead of just hearing the teacher talking all the time, they really have to talk to each other and use those vocabulary words that they're going to see in their books and on the test, feature tests and so forth. So it's just providing those opportunities. And teachers need to be taught how to do it. Because right now, I see that need happening on our campuses.
Anybody else?
The academy that Kagan Academy, I guess I didn't, what grade level teachers is that?
K-5.
It's K-5.
Because all secondary teachers received it this year.
Anybody else? Further questions, comments? All right, Tony?
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Garland?
Yes.
All right, next agenda item.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
Item 3A, report on Tiny Teal High School's senior class of 2011, Mr. Fry.
Board President Coronado, members of the board, Dr. Murphy, good evening. I'd like to introduce, if you don't know, Michelle Escobedo, our senior class counselor. She's done an outstanding job with the class of 2011. You should have received in your Friday packets a copy, an updated copy, interim report on the senior class 2011, looks like this. And I'm just going to, I know that y'all read
page
it.
Page 25. Sorry. Page 25.
I will just hit a few talking points, and then we can answer questions. Michelle obviously has very detailed information on this data. She's created most of it. The information that I'd like to hit, the difference of this class, and I want you to know one of our priorities, and it is it's not just a campus priority, but it is a priority that you're seeing across Texas, is that we're looking at making sure that our kids are staying on cohort, doing everything we can to keep them with their cohort. So the situation, and this is, it is not new, but it's improved. And so this year is the largest senior class that you've seen at Canyon Teal High School.
And Jim, can you define cohort?
The cohort is the year that these kids come as freshmen, 06, 07. So the year that they come in together as freshmen. It also could mean that a student joins this cohort from another school district, but they also started the fall school year 2006, 2007. And then they move along together to graduate on time. We have 15 students in this class that were from prior holdover years. We also have 7 students in this class who have have accelerated their progress up to join this class. What I was referring to is we had 43 students who at some point lost their way and fell off cohort for a school year or a portion of a school year. And that it could have been reclassified as a freshman, could have meant that they spent 2 years as a sophomore and then leapfrogged up to senior year. It could mean a number of things, but 43 kids due to summer work, due to our alternative center at TLC, also due this year in part to the 10 period schedule, has allowed a greater number, but we've really focused our efforts on making sure, because we know when a kid falls behind 1 year, they're almost certain to fail. 2 years is a death sentence for kids. So that's the class. We have students, we just got our tax results for the seniors last week, and of this graduating class, 10 of these students still have got to pass one or more areas of the tax, and there are 17 of these kids that are in this group that are either former classes or students who, I want to paint this picture because you have to understand, if I'm coming to as a 2006 cohort and I fail as a freshman and I reclassify and I spend 2 years as a freshman, and then the next year I become a sophomore, what happens a lot of times is that they build up enough credits that they leapfrog over their junior year, okay? They go freshman, sophomore, senior. And what that means for these kids is, depending on the time that they reclassify up to being seniors, they certainly miss the April exam of their junior year for exit. Sometimes they can even lose the July exam of their exit level retest, and in extreme cases, they miss the October exam. So some of these kids that were off cohort have missed out at least one, some two and three opportunities at the exit level exam, which kind of puts them in, it's real difficult to graduate on time with the tax results, because they've in essence lost opportunities because of being reclassified at some point. Does that make sense to you?
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I might, do you happen to have the individual information, like an Excel sheet on this?
Yes, I do. Not with me, but I do. Are you talking with...
talking about, okay, if this senior is on cohort, if this senior is graduating, if they pass the tax, are they missing absences? Do you have it individually on that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And we are with you, right?
Well, I have the tax results, but I don't have all 400 plus names listed out like that, no.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
On this
10 plus 17, they know that they're not walking?
Yes. Okay. As soon as we received the results, I individually met with every single student, one of these students, and how the conversation went was, tax results are in, and some of them passed one or two and didn't pass the final one that they needed. I let them know that is required for graduation. It is the state of Texas graduation requirement. I let them know that the board policy is that students must complete all graduation requirements to walk. And what I encouraged them, I said that as soon as summer school began, they would be back with us and tutoring for the July 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th retests of the tax, whatever. It's English is on the 11th, math the 12th, science the 13th, and social studies the 14th. And our goal would be that they would pass that at that time, and I told them that they would be at our August 17th summer graduation that's scheduled for 7 o'clock in the auditorium, and went over those details with them individually.
I have an I know you indicated here towards the bottom of the page that some of those students are special ed.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Are some of those students that are not graduating, are they in the bilingual program?
Yeah, well, absolutely, yes. Yes, there are some that are limited English proficient?
Exactly.
Yes.
There's no information here.
Okay, I can get that information for you and update that.
And then, well, go ahead and continue.
Through the chair, if I could make a point here. Last year, The magic number was 17. We had 17 students not graduating due to tax. And you'll remember we tried to do special stuff with them and it didn't work. This year, the graduating class has grown from 348 to 445, 70 kids. And the number of these students that are not going to be able to graduate as far as the cohort is only 10. So they've reduced from 17 to 10, and their graduating class has grown. So that's a real positive correlation this year that we're seeing.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Rodriguez?
On the 15, the 12th grade students of previous, and then you have the numbers students off in cohort 12, is that referring that three of those will be graduating with this class?
You said two things, sir.
On the number of prior year seniors enrolled as 12th graders, it's 15.
Yes.
And then number of students still off cohort, is that the 12, which makes three of these people in that graduating class?
No, the students who are still off cohort are not in these numbers because they have not become 12th graders at this time.
Okay, so the number of prior seniors enrolled as 12th graders,
yes.
It's students 15.
Yes.
How many of those are going to be in this graduating class?
Let me tell you, we got to go back here. So, 11.
So, 11 of them will be graduating? So, we have four people from that should have graduated 2012, which now they...
No, 2010.
2010, which now... We're looking at possibly graduating 2012. So we've eliminated 11 of those, right? Yes. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and then so we have 7 3-year projected, and then we have... There's 43 that were off cohort and have rejoined.
And they're sitting in their senior class as they're supposed to be.
So how many of those are looking at graduating?
That's your question. So kids that were bounced off cohort at some point and rejoined is what you're asking me.
The other question, the number of students still off cohort, that's 12, right? That's...
They're not in the senior
class.
They're
still juniors.
Yeah, they're still juniors.
Yes.
And so we're not looking at any of those coming to graduate,
no.
Right?
No.
Okay.
What's that?
Those do affect
so
our
of that,
graduation.
The ones that rejoined the class.
Yeah, they will.
Projecting.
Because it's got to be 4 years, otherwise they're considered. Then it'll add to our completion rate, but not. It still affects our graduation.
So 37.
That's 37 are graduating.
That's 43.
So six of them are right.
And 11 of those we've graduated.
And those are all one. Okay.
Like
that's right now, Mr. Chair.
Letty.
Mr. Farr, can you describe a mini-master?
Okay. When a student has completed all of the seat time in their course and is deficient and failed the course for some reason, below 70, what we have done, there's two things. One is to re-test the students into mastery. We have some end of course where kids are preparing and through a mini master for an end of course exam, and then we have students who are going through, and what they're doing is they're doing credit recovery. So if there's 3 6-weeks in a semester and the student has failed two of those 6 weeks, the student is being required to go back and retake those 2 6-weeks in order to gain the credit. We're doing this through our alternative center. We're also doing mini-masters If, for example, I've got a teacher in English who's got her students and they failed this semester, and she's actually, we have teachers that are going back and providing the students the work from prior 6 weeks and working with them, and they're providing in-class mini-mester situations where they're redoing the work, bringing it up to passing, grading it, and then going and changing the student's grade in order to match their the learning that's taken place.
So it's just for this that semester, you're not going back to previous semesters or previous years?
Oh, absolutely.
So you're changing grades?
No. There's two scenarios. We have a student who's now enrolled in a new course, in for the second time. And that student is required, they've already done their CTAM, they don't have to sit through the entire course. What they have to do is they have to show that they have the skills, have acquired the objectives and skills in the course. And so we're going through and students are mastering those skills and then they are given a grade for that course. The other situation that I was saying is that a student is with a teacher in a course. Okay, so if it's an English 4 class and I'm sitting in that class and it's second semester but I failed first semester, my teacher is arranging mini-mester and I'm working with my teacher and the teacher is going back and changing their own grade from previous semesters.
Also in that first scenario, if I may, through the chair, the first scenario of the mini-mesters, the TLC lab, basically it's three classrooms at this point. You have at least five professionals, five staff members working in there.
People from every content area.
They're using the A-plus courses, A-plus learning,
correct.
To redo, and they're being monitored. And there's five teachers and or aides in there at any given time working with those students. And they're having to do the mastery exams, to do the work prior to the mastery exams, pre-test, post-test, very controlled environment. They can only do it in the one place that's in that lab with those teachers supervising very carefully and working through a controlled software program that doesn't allow them just to skip ahead. They have to pass the exams as they go along. And I encourage anyone to come over and take a look at it. It is amazing. They're actually charting on a wall all the credits that the students are earning through this program. And it has really been successful and helpful, and also in a very controlled environment.
All right. Any other questions?
I have a question. On your second entry here, students at risk of not graduating June 4th, 2011, you've got number of students in jeopardy due to failing courses needed for graduation, 66. That's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids, but I was asked to give you this report, and it's for the 5th, 6 weeks. That's based purely on kids that are failing in the 5th, 6 weeks. But what we know is that those are all the courses. We also know that number, Michelle, that number, we make our teachers give us a hard number about 3 weeks into this last 6 weeks to say, okay, how many students are still failing? Michelle has already moved a number of students out of certain courses. We've already started credit recovery with those kids. What would you say the numbers, if you had to say it today, would be?
50%.
So it's about half that. Going into the final two
Which would
weeks.
Be 33 children are still failing their courses and will not graduate.
In jeopardy. You asked me this question
in jeopardy.
June 5th, and I'll have a different answer. But we are working until the very, very, very end to ensure that these kids are successful. And until that end.
And then am I reading correctly, right above that, the number of students not graduating due to techs, you've got 5, 2, 5, 20, which equals 32. If you add that to the 66.
Okay. Add it, there should be an extra space in between. There's underneath the 5 English language arts, 16 mathematics, 16 science, 2 social studies, there should be another space there. It should be paragraph.
Okay, but
there's two students who need all four.
Uh-huh.
There's five that need.
I understand.
Two. That is 27 kids.
It's just a breakdown.
Okay, so do you take the 27 plus the 66 and come up with the total number, and that is actually how many it looks like are not going to graduate?
No, you've got 14 kids that are, 14 of these 27 kids that didn't pass TAS are also in the 66.
Okay, yeah, that makes it better. Thank you. And going down to the next one, your scholarship amounts. Mm-hmm. Michelle, could you tell me who got the largest scholarship and where it's to?
That's Board President Coronado, board members, Dr. Murphy. Our biggest scholarship this year is our Bill Gates scholarship recipient, Gina Gallardo. She's going to St. Mary's. She obviously has a full ride, is wanting to go in the health science area. Physical therapy is her focus. She's hoping to continue her studies beyond a bachelor's and continue it. So that's great. The biggest recipient we've got.
Pay until she gets tired of going to school.
It can go into a doctorate degree.
Whoa, very nice.
So, very proud of her.
It's completely everything.
That's incredible.
That's awesome.
I have changed my number that Michelle just told me from today, and it's 4,289,836. And we just had three of our students sign partial scholarships to play soccer at the college level in Oklahoma. So it's going up daily.
These were the wonderful young men that came in that were the champions, that were the seniors, and we were all crying.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Yes. So we've had, we're right sitting around 12 or 13 student athletes this year that have signed full or partial.
Excellent.
Most in my time here. It's been a real successful year.
Thank you. Very good.
Monica.
Mr. Wright. The number, where it says total number of students who have applied to college, tech school, or university,
yes.
Does that also include students who have are going military, or that's a separate?
No, those kids will be embedded in this number.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Rodriguez.
The numbers look really good, and I guess what I want to look at the next report, the final report, is a comparison to last year, so that way we could get... We could see that big jump that we've had across the board.
We'll be happy to do that. Mr. Chair.
Dr. Murphy.
President, two numbers I really want to highlight are in college readiness, the bookend numbers, the first number and the last number. Superintendent Board goals have that 100% of all graduating seniors will apply to college. And that it also has 100% will have taken a college placement exam. And right now we're at 93% applied and 98% have taken an exam. And
well, we hadn't done that.
Yeah. Oh. Well, anyway, I just want to really highlight that because I'm sure last year those two numbers were not that high, were they, Jim?
No. No, not even close.
Not even close.
Can you give us a comparison?
We're talking in the 60% at the most. I can get that 2010 senior report. I'll give you that side by side. We're talking the numbers of college applications was in the 60s, and then the SAT, ACT was lower. And I know, as Mondo has pointed out in a number of occasions, we had kids that said they were going to a certain college or university, they hadn't taken the college readiness exam associated with that. So, and actually the number on applications for college tech school and universities is at 394, so it's up to 95% as of today. I'll tell you, the college readiness exams, we're probably where we are going to end. We have seven students, and we set a lofty goal of 100%, and that has driven us all year long. There are students who are not physically able to take an exam. Some of our severe and profound students will be graduating with us this year, and that's the reason why we have some that just not going to be in that number. So, and the FAFSA number is up to 60%, so it is up from 49%. On top of that, if any of y'all probably gone through with your kids through the FAFSA, it takes some personal information, some tax information, and we've found that is the most difficult to do. And Michelle had a grandparent call her the other day and told her she was being hard on his grandson for forcing him to get this FAFSA, and why he's not going to go to college, he's going to do this and that, and you know, it's my tax information and this and that, and that's where we stand, and we have to be respectful of that. But also what I told the kids in class is, we're doing this so that when you go September and you realize you don't want to do what you had planned out, which was, you know, go live with so-and-so or go work here or whatever, that you don't have to do what a lot of kids do, and that's go back and scramble to put all the pieces of the puzzle back together to figure out where you need to be for college readiness. And so I said, it's an insurance policy for some of you. For some of you, it's your, you know, it's your top priority, it's your plan. So.
Monica.
Mr. Fry, how many FAFSA workshops did you provide this year to senior parents?
We had two big ones, okay? And then we've just been one-on-one. Because we've drawn in a lot of the ones that we knew that would come during those, and then it was just special attention to the others. Because it's along with, you know, translations and so forth. So.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Betty?
Right now you mentioned about the grandmother. Are they notified that they can also do this at home?
We've given out the information. Well, you want to talk about the information that you sent home with kids and the directions and what all of that.
Sure.
They've been notified that they can come in and do the workshops with us, like FAFSA nights, and what to bring and how to be prepared for them. They've also been notified through my classroom presentations, and I've done an array of them throughout the school year where I bring in my PowerPoint, I give them a copy of what we're doing, I tell them what are the actual website that they need to go into, I pop it up for them, I give them the steps that they need to do, and I absolutely tell them you're more than welcome to either bring it in to me in the morning, any morning that I'm in my office, I can help you, I'll walk you through it. We have a series of our laptops that I can sit kids and do them all together at one time. Or here's the information, you can take it home. This is what you can do with your parents. This is how you log in. These are the kind of questions that you will see. If at any point you get stuck, you need my assistant, I'll be more than happy to come and help you with it.
It's like filling out taxes for the first time, but filling them out in a...
Lori.
I have one other question. At the top of this page, we have numbers of seniors enrolled as of 5/19, 445. As we work down into the college readiness, looks like that number diminishes to 415. What's the...
Well, you have 15 right off the top that are in the class of 2010.
Okay.
And then we have 15 students who are... that are sitting in there, because we have homebound students. We also have some students who are registered through, like, GED. We inherit them from the Lone Star building. So there's some students that are sitting in there that are those numbers. There's 30 of them. 15
yes.
In the class of 2010, and then 15 from homebound, and I say extenuating circumstances. Or
what those children are. Okay, thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you, Mr. Farmer.
Sure. Anybody else?
I have a question. I wanted to commend you for working so hard to make sure that our students apply for scholarships, because I know it's difficult. Do you, and I know you're very busy with the seniors, do you approach the juniors at the end of the school year to start talking to them about the things that they need to apply for scholarships, the things that they need to look for and apply for universities?
Absolutely. This is an ongoing process. It's not something that you all of a sudden as a senior, wow, it's here, we need to do this. We have an excellent counseling team where we go in and we do classroom visitations. We prepare them, it's beginning their junior year, to start looking into the colleges of their interest. We do give them options of, look, these are the kind of things that you want to look in, cost, expenses that you'll have, the kind of schools that are out there, what you will be needing. From their junior year, they are being co
coach to get their SATs or ACTs out of the way so that they can have another administration your senior year if they want to better their scores. So it's an ongoing process that we begin to talk to our kids, not only just on these areas, but also on the areas of making sure that you go into the AP exams, that you go into the AP classes, that you take the more rigorous type of classes out there, that you go into the dual credit, so that you can prepare yourself for when you come to your senior year, you can have that better shot at coming into whatever college of your choice. So it's an ongoing process with my fellow counselors that, you know, we go out there and we talk to the kids and give them presentations. Again, at the corresponding level of your freshman and sophomore, but we touch in one of the points or one of the points needed to kind of get you at the end of the year at your senior point where you kind of compile all of those areas.
And between the AccuPlacer and the SAT, ACT, by the end of this summer, we should have about half of that, those juniors will have already taken one or more of those. So it's kind of expedited their process because they know that the seniors have gone through this. Is another step.
Just one last question. How many counselors are there at Custer?
She said not enough. One per grade level. And we'll be, yes, one per grade level.
Thank you.
And
we should have, well, we should have like six.
Since I go for the committee, we have one that will be like six. Yeah, the student to counselor ratio recommended is 200 to 250, depending on special pops, and our counselors see 350 to one. So it's, yeah. they have their hands full with that. I can't say enough about the work they've done.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Rodriguez.
On the final number that we have not graduating, or as of the snapshot,
okay.
So the final?
This,
whether it's tax or...
Still, well, the tax is final because there's no other administration before July.
So how many people do we see not walking or graduating because of tax?
27.
But 17 are off cohort.
17 of those were off cohort, and then I would tell you what usually what we see, and it, you're going to think it's insane, but this 66 will be down to probably right around 10 or 12. Our staff works extremely hard, the teachers work extremely hard, and nobody wants to see a student fail this close to, or trip and fall this close to the finish line, but there are some that they just need. They need the extra time. They have to have some time in the summer. They just, for whatever circumstances, they need that extra time.
Monique.
Mr. Fry, I noticed that none of these kids or have been identified or doesn't stay here for attendance purposes. Is that the case, or you
no,
want to address that?
We had, there's, I started middle of April addressing students who are falling in, were in the, and the kids will tell you it's a bucket list because I put them in a bucket. But there were students that were on the fringe and they had missed 6 days and most of them were excused, some of them had, and so I put them on notice. And then there was kids that were under, you know, about 10-12% sitting right there. And we began per the state law, the principal can review those and put those students on a plan, which I did. And so all of those kids, there's roughly 40 students that are in that bucket. Then there was a bucket of kids that fell below 75%, which by state law says that you have to go to before a committee. Our committee met with those students last week, and based on the situation of the kids, they also, you know, the state law provides for extenuating circumstances, which if you all sat on this, you have gone through the boxes of Kleenex like this committee did, but all but five of those kids were put on a plan for graduation. All but five of those kids in bucket three, the most serious of the three attendance situations, will graduate on time, but five kids will be extended beyond the school year to finish in the summer. So, but those five students are also embedded in our tax numbers.
The other numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, because what happens is if you miss the attendance, you don't get credit. So that means you didn't pass the course, basically.
Right.
You don't get credit.
They've got to be, they've got to go on credit recovery.
So those are lumped into that number.
What, Mr. Chair, one of the things that I just want some clarification. I know Jim knows that I worked at the admissions and recruitment, and I know that if it is a concern, if there is any undocumented students, I believe that there's a state law. I don't know, and I would like some clarification at the college level. So if you were accepting admissions, you're not allowed to ask for that type of documentation if you've gone through high school a couple of years, I believe. Do you all know what I'm
talking about? I know what you're talking about, but I don't
know.
What
can you get that clarification and send it to us on a Friday packet?
Sure.
And then the other, I just want to comment. I know I've been a big pain on Mr. Jeffries, and I just want to thank you all, especially your staff and pretty much yourself, because you're in charge of the whole senior class. But it's something that, you know, we're starting to see a transformation and a culture of high expectations, and you know, that college readiness, that workforce readiness, and I think that's what we're, once we continue to create that culture, we're going to see that difference in the long run within our students, realizing that they have the ability to go out and do what they need to do to become productive citizens, which is pretty much what our goal is. And so I just want to thank you all. I want to see some more details, but I'll get with you all after this year. Well, for this year, I'll be in touch. I'll be in the painting a little bit. Right. Thank you all.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chair.
Doc?
I just want to clarify something on the mini masters. Help me with this. Let's say a student receives a 67 in a course, teacher fails him, gets a 67. He does not go into an immediate mini master in the sense that it's during the course. Let's say it's a year later. He comes in to the TLC, he goes through a mini master, supervised by the professionals there, A+ learning, pre-test, post-test, all that. And he passes the mini master, say he gets an 85. What happens to the transcript?
The transcript still shows the 67. The class has never removed what he's earned with that 67 holds, but now he's retaking the class, and the 85 is also going to be shown in the new transcript, so it's going to continue having both.
So it's a new course, new class.
Yes.
So that's good. What we don't want is that 67 being manipulated or changed.
Absolutely.
Because the teacher owns that grade.
The only situation is that when the teacher who owns that grade goes back and does the work with that particular student, and I sign those ones off when those teachers come in with those special circumstances. So.
Thank you, Ms. Escobedo. Thank you.
Mr. Clark.
Anybody else? All right. I just have some comments about, I'm glad to see that the number of students passing the tax and failing courses that are not graduating for not passing tax and failing courses is down. I think that's great to see. It used to be we had more people with the tax issues and not credit courses.
Last year was 65.
Which to us was an issue several years back when we had students coming to tell us, I've passed all my courses and I didn't pass the tax. If I pass the courses, why can't I pass my tax? It's your guys' problem. And to that effect, that's true. You know, students pass their science. We pass them here for their science exam and they can't pass the tax. Well, we should take some responsibility in that. But I'm glad to see that it's changing. That it's not really, the bigger number is not those that can't pass the tax. It's those that are, you know, struggling with passing their courses. And that is even going to drop down. And ideally, it should be about equal in terms of if we have a curriculum that's based and rigorous enough for them to pass the test, then it should be about equal. And if you're correct and you're going to get that number down to about 15 or so, then it's going to work out that it is about equal. So I mean, that's, it used to be skewed way the other way. It used to be that the tax everybody, and it was always math and science, and I still see it that way. However, it's, at least it's not as horrible. It used to be almost 90% math and science was, or 90-some percent was math and science, that we just couldn't do it. So I'm glad to see those trends developing, and I'm glad to see the numbers up on taking the entrance exams. That in itself is a wakening up for the kids, and you know, at that point they have their option. I can understand the FAFSA would be great for everybody to apply, but it just doesn't depend on the student, and we can't really control that 100%. So I guess we have to be thankful that we get whatever percentage we get out of that, because we don't control the parents, and the parents don't want to cooperate. We obviously have no issue there. So, but I like the outreach that's being done by your office to try and get that. So I'm really happy with what the numbers we're seeing, and just hopefully that 66 comes down, as you said. And, overall, it's been quite a change, and I've been able to notice it every year, the quality of our kids that are graduating. Every time we interview these kids for scholarships through CAFE, I mean, they just continuously start to, you know, really impress us more and more. It's just really a good thing to see. And I wish we had more money for them. But, you know, every little bit helps for them.
Did you have a lot of applicants this year? Did you have a lot of applicants?
We had 43 applicants.
Have you ever had that?
No. This is
close to that?
No, I think 30.
Okay. We're going to make it
more rigorous. That was one of those things that I put in my presentations where I brought in with the kids, here's the CAFE scholarship, this is what are the requirements, and we promote it a lot.
Yeah.
I'm getting that out of the LULAC scholarships. I put out a lot of the scholarships for the kids with the new GO Center that we had. I think that has been a nice hub where the kids have been able to come in and grab a lot of the stuff that is available for them, and that was one of those things. I mean, I walked them to them, and I told them, here's the CAFE. This is the one you've got to apply to. If not any, this is the one that you've got to apply.
Right, I mean, because only them are eligible. So they,
those are the best scholarships.
Those are the best ones. There's one other that I don't know, in the past some of our students had not applied, but there's also the Anthony Rotary.
Right, and we have that one out as well.
Good. And so I'm really, you know, we had 43, I think, 43, Patsy,
yes,
kids that applied. We only had money for 10 of them, but it was, it's very difficult. So that just kind of lets us try to work harder during our fundraising events to try and get that number.
If I can make a comment on those 10, they were very grateful, and I was very happy to see that all of them were awarded, because I don't think there was one kid that didn't deserve to have a scholarship, and so they were very grateful, and I'm very grateful to having that scholarship for them, because it makes a big impact in their lives.
It like I said, it's you know, it was hard just to whittle them down even to the ones we were going to interview. And we debated. The board debated back and forth quite a bit.
It was a difficult test.
Very, very difficult. And it's the I mean, just the applicants are getting better year. And the way they interviewed this year was just, and I'm sorry you weren't able to make it, Patsy, but
and they were in my office asking, when are we going to know what's going on? When are they going to tell us something? So they were very, very excited.
Well, that's great, and the entire board is invited to that reception, which is next week, right? 31st, to see these kids that received that scholarship, and they'll be honoring their teacher that has inspired them, and that's always a great. We've had one of those in the past, and this will be the second one. So,
President, looks like we're gonna have a longer graduation ceremony this year. 70 more seniors. That's a bigger traffic jam, too. Tim, you need to start talking about that. Because remember last year, I think we started a half an hour late because we waited for traffic to come in off the feeder road.
That's
so talk to your seniors about that issue.
Carpool.
That's true. We did have to wait because there were still people in line before when there was time to start. We started late.
Why not put them all on a bus?
It's the families.
Put their families on a bus too. Put everybody in the bus.
We could try it with some. I mean,
we got a lot of buses. Yeah.
To that end, Dr. Murphy, I'd like to see if you get Mr. Armendariz to check with the city how they're going on purchasing the rights of way for the exit through the back of the school that's going to go through the community college, the spur. That would help tremendously. And the city's been dragging their feet through ever. We kept putting their feet to the fire, and they always managed to somehow delay it. So,
Ernesto, did you hear that?
I'm sorry, I was having another conversation.
You know, we're talking about access to the high school, and during these big events that we, you know, it kind of gets overloaded there. But if we had an access through the back, which we will eventually, through the spur, maybe we can, I don't know if you can do something about checking with the city to see where there are along the way of purchasing the rights of way for the spur.
Oh, yes, I've been checking on those, and right now it's not only the city, but also the state that's involved in it.
Right.
And so go ahead and put some information, because I know I received some information with respect to what they're looking at and the timelines.
If you can just, within this next month, tell us what's going on with that.
Sure. Also, Ernesto and Jim, are we allowed to park on EPCC?
Get their permission, but I do need to check with the sports park.
And then, Ernesto, is there any back way in that we...
No, there is.
Well, there's Jeeps.
Yeah, you have a Jeep truck, and you have parents that do that. But I do know that the security guards are aware of, are aware that we have the graduation. And I know we've called them, and they called my office, and I refer them to Mr. Bird, and they have said that they could park.
I've seen our public information officer trying that route in his vehicle.
We've got more space. We've got more parking this year. You guys can be a bigger crowd because all of that street along to the Head Start Center and all of that's been added and it's punched through. So we're going to have, we'll have to hike it a little bit.
In line with the best thought, we could possibly have everyone park at the outlet mall. Get on the buses and bus them in.
We could look at some...
they've got tons of parking.
Just can't have any breakdowns or accidents. That's what happened last year.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else?
Board members, please come early, or else you'll get stuck in the traffic jam.
Yes.
Well, we can use Gustavo's Jeep.
Yeah.
We can use your Jeep.
Gustavo, you might have to be shuttling VIPs.
Get down here at the 7-Eleven and he'll bus us over there.
Yeah.
All right, Ward. Thank you.
Thank you,
Jim.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good job, guys, both, and your counseling staff, Jim. Good job, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Escobar.
Thank you.
All right. Next agenda item.
Item 4 is executive session, and the time is now 7:42 p.m. and the meeting is to be closed at the Section 51071-551072 for consultation with attorney and consultants regarding acquisition of school site for new school.
Over there.
Guys, superintendent.
You guys want to eat first?
We're going to go to the other conference.